Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Mascara. I am Jess.
You're back.
Oh, yes. Hi.
I'm Jen. Still Jen.
Very happy to be back. It's been a couple of weeks. It was very exciting to hear your episode, your Soko mascara episode.
Did we do okay without you?
You did great. It was very interesting.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. I was nervous.
No.
You weren't here.
No. It was fantastic.
And how was your vacation in
Miami? Will Smith style, big okay. Willie style down in Miami.
Okay, thanks for the 1990s reference.
Yeah. No, I had a great time. It's very relaxing, very refreshing.
So let's talk.
Okay, so here's what we've got going on this episode. This is a biggie. We've been waiting for this one for a while. Big guest, but before that, two topics. We're going to talk about hair breakage, specifically that from your old ponytail holders, mm-hmm. Okay? Then we're going to talk about, I'm going to get real personal today. I'm going to talk about one of the real reasons I got into the whole beauty game.
And our guest.
Oh, my God. I mean, can we get a drum roll here?
Get ready for the masterclass, okay. Right?
We have
Mario Dedivanovic, a.k.a. Makeup by Mario, celebrity in his own right, but also makeup artist to Kardashian family, Bebe Rexha, Ariana Grande. I mean, we had such a lovely conversation with him. Actually, two conversations.
It's a two-parter.
Which we'll explain when we get into the interview. Yeah. But honestly, if you're an aspiring makeup artist or just, you know, a fanboy or girl, you're going to love this interview.
I mean, who's the real deal?
Yeah,
it was great. The big kahuna.
Let's get into it.
You guys are so great sending the DMs and emails about what is on your mind beauty-wise. And I can't even keep up with it all. So you have to forgive me. I forgot which of you sent me this question. So I'm so sorry. But one of you sent a cue about what to do about breakage from ponytail holders. Now, I'm assuming you're just using the old goody elastic kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if you're wearing ponytails and buns a lot, you're going to have like a little spiky breakage around like where your ponytail, you know, would be, which would probably be around the crown,
mm-hmm.
around like the little, you know, the back of the head. And I feel your pain because sometimes I have that too. It looks spiky and like it looks just like silly sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, so it reminds me of like those electric, remember those electric balls or like static, like.
Yeah, or it's a line, because when your hair's not in the ponytail, there'll be like a tiny line of breakage in the center of the head, like right around ear level.
Yeah.
But that's because when your hair's up in the ponytail, right where the wrap was, yeah, was where there's breakage. So I did a little research, mm-hmm, talked to celebrity hairstylist Jonathan Colombini.
Okay.
Here's the thing. You cannot glue hair back together. We have discussed this. Even those products that say they seal split ends.
Mending products.
You know what? They do temporarily because they're working with like a negative and positive charge, but it works on the ends because
it's intense.
Well, you know, it like coats it with ingredients and then the two pieces grab to each other for a temporary bond. It just doesn't work the same with that breakage that's in the middle of the hair shaft.
So you're saying those, the ones, the ion ones or whatever, they work for this
like split ends.
Oh,
better,
okay,
right?
Because
this
got
kind
it
of breakage isn't necessarily a split end. It's like you broke off your hair,
yeah,
right?
The hair's gone. It's
mid-shaft
down the drain.
Unless, and you can't glue it back.
It's
on
in the parking lot.
So I think what we have to talk about here is prevention.
Yes.
Everybody, first of all, if you're using a goddamn rubber band to put your hair up, just sorry. You deserve the breakage.
They probably aren't listening to this podcast. Yeah.
However, Jonathan was saying a lot of people use, you know, a wrapped hair tie that's like cottony and stretchy and whatever. Even those aren't good. And he said it's not
really
just because of the tightness. I was like, oh, right, because you're making it too tight. You should loosen up. He's like, no, it's the act of pulling the hair through it as you wrap it around a couple times,
oh,
that causes the breakage, because that's when the tension, think about it, because you pull it sideways while you're wrapping it in,
uh-huh,
and it's causing that friction against the side right at that point,
right,
that makes breakage. He is a fan of, which always scared me for years, the bungee hair elastics.
Oh, I can never figure out how to use those.
There's two schools of thought on them. These are the, it's like a hair elastic material, but then there's two hooks on the end.
Yeah.
Some people use them, they hook it into the, they make the ponytail, they hook it into the hair, wrap around several times, and then hook the hook back into the hair, almost, uh-huh, like a bobby pin,
right,
not onto the elastic itself. He says, no, I like to hook the hook onto the other hook
first.
No, that's just how you close it.
Oh.
I just find that to be really hard to get them to line up. Do you, yeah, know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I like the other way too, which is where you wrap it around and then you just hook it into your own hair. Maybe that would cause more breakage. I don't know. But that's one thing. The other thing is, if we're doing the ponytail just because we want to keep it out of your face while you're washing your hair or when you're home, get a scrunchie.
It's so funny, like the resurgence of the scrunchie.
Especially those slip pillowcase ones.
So yeah, you were out to a work dinner recently,
I
right?
thought they were just like, oh, when I'm around the house, scrunchie. And three of a very cool girl sitting around me at this dinner all had these scrunchies in. And I was like, I kind of dig it. I don't know.
This goes back to what we were saying like a couple of weeks ago. Like if you wore something the first time, can you wear it the second time around? Listen, you kind of lovingly teased me over the summer when I had my summer hair accessory, my little J. Crew X Liberty scrunchie.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. It has a bow on it, too.
Yeah.
I love J. Crew scrunchies. They're a little overpriced, but they're so much fun.
Okay,
and
this is an accessory where quality matters, though, because a cheap scrunchie is like cheap.
Yeah, no, I have my scrunchie in my bag right now.
Yeah.
I don't limit it to the summer. I love it. It's a great print. But the scrunchie, it doesn't, there's no tension in the hair, but like it's not for exercising.
Right. And so for exercising, the bungee hair elastics is the way to go.
I'm not using those, but yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, as far as hiding it goes, the other thing is obviously a smoothing product will make it less noticeable, but you just can't glue the hair back on. Sorry,
no.
You're going to have the breakage.
No, I think it is about prevention. And yeah, I haven't tried the slip ones yet. I know we said we're going to, but people seem to really like them.
Yeah. So. That's what we've got for help.
Yeah.
Also, change the spot of the ponytail. Everybody's heard that tip.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're always at the crown of the head, put it at the nape of the hair. So it's it's not always in the same spot. Maybe throw it on the side. You're getting a scrunchie already. Might as well do a side ponytail now.
And also maybe like some heat protection spray or just something to give it a little slip. So it's not like on like dry, brittle hair.
When you're pulling it through the hair tie.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Yeah.
And you know, hair is weaker when it's wet. That's science, people.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe wait to put your ponytail in until it's dry.
Yeah.
Look at all this.
Yeah.
Look at these tips that we have for you. You're welcome.
Jen, a couple of weeks ago, we had the fabulous Alessandra Steiner on the show. And we talked about, you know, her beauty journey. And there was a little bit of like back and forth, like, oh, my God, that's why I got into beauty. Yeah.
You know, because you two were long lost sisters. And I sat here like a bump on a log.
No,
I'm just kidding.
That's not true.
It's not true.
That's
at
not
all.
True. But we had a lot in common about like how we got into our beauty journey and like the things that we shared in common. And then even when we left the studio, we were walking down the street together and like having just a little bit of chat about like, you know, beauty was always so democratic, like fashion, even though we're both into fashion as like, you know, younger kids, like there were elements of it that like were just not as appealing as beauty.
And
I was like,
Alex and I were talking about this offline.
Mm-hmm. And I thought about like, you know, we both of us have talked about on the podcast about like why we loved beauty as, you know, kids and teens and like, you know, what brought us into the industry. But I felt like the conversation that Alex and I had on air and off the air really stuck with me because I felt like there's a part of the story that I haven't been as open about with you. Well, maybe with you, but like and our listeners that feels like such a big part. But I don't know why I haven't talked about it.
I think it's time for you to talk
about
it. I think
it's time to share. So, like...
I'm nervous.
No, it's not bad. It's not
okay,
bad.
Okay.
Like, there's something about beauty that is so accessible. And, like, I grew up in a town where, frankly, like, it was a very ritzy town. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, and I'm not begrudging it, but it was very ritzy. And I think most kids or a lot of kids can relate to not feeling like they measure up in some way. In whatever way that is. So just like put yourself in those shoes. And I remember feeling like, you know, it's funny, like when Kate Spade died, like, you know, rest in peace. But like everyone was like writing on these like things online, like, oh, I remember my first Kate Spade bag or like my seventh Kate Spade bag. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't have a Kate Spade bag. But I remember that feeling of so many of the girls in my school all having them. Mm-hmm. I remember so many of them had Prada bags.
What?
Freaking Prada, which was like, that really like blew my mind. And that was just not even like, it was not a possibility. And I don't think that like I was a deprived child because of that. I don't think that young girls should have bags that are that much money. But that's like neither here nor there. But what was really empowering to me was I could work, and I did, mm-hmm. and I could like march right up to the, you know, at the time, I'm dating myself here, but like this was like my favorite counter, the Versace counter. They had a makeup line. Google it. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And think nothing of spending $100 and walking with a compact and a lipstick.
Well, not think nothing. You worked hard for that
well,
money.
Yeah, I worked hard for it. Like I might have worked like the
whole. But $100 in the Kate Spade store, the Prada store, would get you
nowhere
nothing.
Fast. But yeah. I felt like this was so sophisticated. And I know nobody cared about these things. No one was like, oh my God, did you see Jess Matlin with her? Like, no, like these things didn't even register. Mm-hmm. Like no one was, these were not objects of envy or status at my school. But to me, they meant like the world because this was the world I was interested in. Like I was reading Vogue, I was reading Bazaar, I was reading W. You know, like, to me, this was like where I wanted to be. So these things mattered. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm going on a bit, but the point is like, it was an entry into a world.
Yeah. So you liked the beauty world because it gave you access to luxury.
Access to luxury, but like a sense of independence, a sense of like sophistication.
Yeah.
I liked the service. I can't explain
this
it, but it was
so,
really.
It's funny that you're saying this, and
yeah.
here's why.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a good time to point out what's going on with our mm-hmm. interview that's about to come up. As you know, it's Mario Dedivanovic.
Yeah.
Jess and I did an interview with him 3 or 4 weeks ago. If you remember, we had a week where we had quote unquote technical difficulties. Mm-hmm. We lost the first portion of the interview,
yeah.
Which sucked because it was great. So we talked to him and he finally was back in town and I was able to go to his apartment to re-record the beginning, but Jess couldn't come with me because she was on vacation. So just so you know, as you're about to listen to the interview, there is a portion that's just he and I talking and then we pick back up in the studio, so it might sound a little janky, but you are pretty much giving the story that he will wait until you hear why he says he got into beauty.
I can't wait because I haven't heard it yet.
Right, because he didn't talk about this when the three of us talked together, but it was a sense of he grew up in a community where, you know, aesthetics weren't like, you know, you're just surviving, you're just getting by, mm-hmm. and like that sense of aesthetic luxury is what drew him to the beauty world. It's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was an escape from
yeah.
my like day to day, and
oh,
you
I'm
know,
so excited
it
for
wasn't.
You to hear this.
I have to add this too, and you know, we were just talking about this with someone else, but like, it wasn't about you know, my size. And then we talked about this a little bit with Alessandra. It wasn't about, like, do I fit into this, or, like, am I pretty enough, or, like, am I, like, makeup always fits. I mean, there was a joke, like, shoes and makeup always fit, or, like, a cliche. It was just this entry into this world, like, for $30, I had access to something that I was never going to have access to, you know, a Kate Spade bag.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it was, I feel like that's a huge part.
Yeah, you've always talked about how you loved magazines and feminine stuff and sparkly things and glamour, but it also was a socioeconomic thing for you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't really talk about that. And
Americans especially, we don't talk about
that. Yeah, no, we don't talk about class, and we don't talk about how makeup can make you feel, and like the dream of beauty. And like, that's why, you know, Chanel and Dior, they can put on the most amazing runway shows, but the fragrances and the lipsticks keep them in business, because that's what most people, that's the dream, you know, that's the access to the dream. And I don't know, I just feel like that's a really important part of my story. And I felt like I wasn't being completely honest when we spoke with Alex, and, you know, maybe I haven't even been completely honest with myself.
I'm glad you shared. And I'm really excited for you to hear, and I hope I did okay and asked him the right questions to hear Mario's story, because I think it's a little bit similar in some ways.
I'm very excited that Mario came out on the show. I'm very thankful. So thank you, Mario, for
putting up with our technical difficulties.
For your patience. And thank you to the listeners for bearing with us for a week or two.
And on that note, without further ado, here's our... Okay, so there are some stories about my mom's life that I never get tired of hearing, and they're usually the ones in which she's trying to right some injustice and then ends up annoying the people in power, and I love that about her. Anyway, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve memories and stories for the mother figure in your life or any of your family or chosen family. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. The prompts are really good. The kind of things we ask guests here at Fat Mascara, little things like what's your favorite board game, and more important things like what's the best advice you've ever gotten. Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to the email with a story, long or short, doesn't matter. You'll be emailed a copy of what they wrote, but they'll also be collected. So you'll get to enjoy the retelling of the stories and probably learn some new things in the process. Then after that year of fun, Storyworth automatically compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. Even though I know some of my mom's best stories, I love that the weekly prompts are helping to uncover more details and that they'll be collected in one place for me to revisit and read through. Don't think I'm not going to pull this keepsake book out at our next family get together to share some of them. Listen, everyone loves Storyworth. It has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/mascara. That's storyworth.com/mascara to save $10 on your first purchase. All right, it's not often that we talk about supplements, but when we do, you know that we mean it, all right? Every day I do my skincare routine, and that is a cleanse. I moisturize. Of course, I pop a little antioxidant in there. I'll do a little serum underneath there. But what is non-negotiable for me lately is I take a supplement. That is my Ritual Hyacera. It's a wrinkle support skin supplement, which is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and improve skin smoothness. I'll take that. I'll take it too. Ritual Hyacera is a once daily skin supplement. Jess said clinically proven. Let me give you the deets. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to a 3.6 time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to placebo. Jess and I have been taking it more than 90 days. Let me tell you, it works. Plus, Ritual Hyacera has led to a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness in the same amount of times. It's rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You don't always know if a supplement does that.
Ritual also has industry-leading sustainability standards. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, love that, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. Plus, female-founded, B Corp, meaning they're holding themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of the people and our planet. You gotta love that.
Yes, okay. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust.
Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off.
Okay, everyone, guess what I did last night? I slept in my Honeylove bra. I don't think I've ever slept in a bra before. Usually, I am so excited to take off my bra at the end of the day, there would be no chance I would lay down in it. But Honeylove bras are that comfortable. And if you're someone who does like to sleep in a bra for a little extra support, I feel like the Honeylove crossover bra should be your sleeping bra. Did I just coin a thing, sleeping bra? I don't know if they'll approve of that, but I love the idea. Obviously, you're gonna wear it out all the time too, because Honeylove's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with a fabric that's so soft, it feels like a second skin. Is it spring cleaning time in your house? I know it is in mine. Clean out your bra drawer, get a few from Honeylove. They have the V-neck bra that's smooth and seamless and hardware free. And then my personal favorite is the crossover bra with adjustable straps and a hook back closure. And of course, again, no underwire in that one either. The Honeylove supportive bonding lifts and supports without those uncomfortable wires. And while you're at it, why not pair your Honeylove bra with their matching shapewear or maybe a pair of their breathable, versatile leggings? Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. It's honeylove.com/mascara. And then after you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we here at Fat Mascara sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Again, that website is honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off.
Interview.
Mario.
So, as I told you guys, we had some technical difficulties the first time we recorded with Mario, but I'm here. It's Jen. I'm here with Mario Dedivanovic. How'd I do?
Hey, perfect.
We're in your apartment. You're so nice to host me. We're having a slumber party. No, we're not at all. It's the middle of the day. But I wanted to go back and start our interview, the part that we missed, and talk a little bit about how you got your start as a makeup artist. So, I know we have something in common because we've worked the same place. But before we get into that, like, what was the first thing that got you into beauty?
I want to say it started early, although I didn't know that it started early. I was from the age that I could remember, really, I would say like 4 or 5. I only remember certain things in my childhood, not very much. But I do remember is always this feeling that I would get when I would see either like a beautiful model, or I would see a beautiful home, or I would see, you know, beautiful design. I would get this incredible feeling in my body. I didn't know what that was as a child. I knew as an adult that I was inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And so from a very young age, you know, we lived in the Bronx and, you know, a little apartment that I shared with all my family and, you know, super humble beginnings. My mother was a maintenance woman for L'Oreal, and then she would clean homes in addition, you know, for additional money. And my favorite thing to do as a child was to go with her to these homes. I would beg her, like if I had a half a day or if I had a day off or something from school, because the homes were beautiful.
Wait, you didn't want to go to L'Oreal corporate headquarters?
I wasn't allowed to go in. Okay. I wasn't allowed to go in. But my absolute favorite thing to do was to go to these homes with her, because I would literally, like, I would walk in and I just would never want to leave. I was so inspired by the design, the wallpapers, the art, you know, the plants, everything. My other favorite thing to do, this is so sad actually, because, like, you know, instead of playing games with everyone, it's like I would ask my dad to drive us to drive me to Westchester so I could see the lawns and the homes. So I was anything that I saw that was beautiful, like physically had a reaction, like,
yeah,
you know, I was incredibly inspired. And then obviously when I started seeing magazines, my oldest sister Vicky, who was gorgeous, who still is gorgeous, she would get ready for school in the morning, and I never looked at her thinking like, oh, she's putting makeup on. I just looked at her like the process of the hair and the makeup, and
yeah,
I was always fascinated by it. I always, like, kind of, again, it made me feel inspired.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't think twice about makeup. You know, my mom would bring home sometimes makeup from the L'Oreal building, never looked at it, never thought twice about it. And then I wanted to be a teacher. That's what I wanted to do my entire life. And when I walked into Sephora when I was 17, I was looking for a job in the city. I went to like
just like a retail job. You didn't care if it was fashion or beauty.
I didn't care. I just wanted to get a job in the city. I was almost kind of rebelling because I had been working since I was 12 years old and giving my father my money every week. You know, it's like a cultural thing that we do. Mm-hmm. And I thought that he was saving up the money for my college, but he didn't. So when it was time to go to college, I told him, okay, I want to go to Miami. I want to go to here. I want to go to there. And he's like, basically, it was like a joke. He's like, are you kidding me? With what? And I'm like, with the money I've been giving you for the past several years. And he's like, well, no, that money's gone. We paid bills with that money. And so then I wanted to rebel, and I was like, well, guess what? I'm not going to college. And literally the next day I was like, Mom, take me to the city, and I want to go find the job. I mean, how sheltered was I that at 17 I had to ask my mom to take me to the city? But anyway, we went, and then I walked into a Sephora, and I literally, like, it was like an epiphany. I was just like, oh, my God, I was surrounded. It was so beautiful, and it was three floors, and they all had these black, I think, I want to say YSL designed the suits at that time.
This is like what, like 2000?
2000. I'd have to check.
That's when I worked there too. That's so funny. Yeah. This was the one on Fifth Avenue?
It was on Rockefeller Center.
It was the flagship. And it had the big, like, perfume organ thing.
Oh, it was
And the
gorgeous.
Shower gels all rainbow.
Yes, 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 yes. Oh my God, the shower gels. Remember? They don't make those anymore.
Yeah, no, they don't
wow,
do those.
I just thought, and the lipsticks.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, so I walked in there, and it was like a sliding, revolving door, and my mother, she just literally, like, pulled my hand, trying to take me outside of the other. She's like, no, this is not for you. This is not for you. This is not a store for you. And I'm like, stop, leave me alone. I'm like, I want to go. And I went, and I asked for the job. I just remember walking around and seeing everyone with the gloves, and I was like, oh, my God, I want to work here. So I
yeah, for people that don't know, they used to wear those black gloves yes. to, like, display, like, theater.
But it was only
products.
One. So it was, like, it was just so fancy. I don't know. And then, you know, but from a kid from the Bronx, I was like, you know, I didn't go to the city that often. And then they never called me back. And I think some of the other places did, like Armani or something. But I didn't take those jobs because I was, like, dead set on Sephora.
You were holding out.
Oh, yeah. So there was a woman named Marie Christine. Don't ask me how I got her number. I want to say I went to the library and researched the corporate offices of Sephora in France.
Yeah.
I got in touch with this woman named Marie Christine. She was the head of all Sephoras. And she said she was coming to New York the next week or the next 2 weeks. And I went into the New York offices. I met with her.
Like in the corporate offices?
Yeah, in New York.
On 58th Street?
I don't remember. But yeah, it was probably like you.
What if you were like... My cubicle was in there. What if, like...
Maybe we crossed paths.
I got to go look back at my pictures from work.
Do you know who that is, Marie Christine?
Yeah. She was, like, when the French were coming
yes,
to town.
Yes, she was
you had
blonde.
To, like,
yeah,
we all had to be wearing all black and
she was
everything.
A big deal, like, in the stores, you know? And she basically interviewed me, and I told her, you know, I worked at the Bronx Zoo, and I worked at... I was a pretzel boy at the Bronx Zoo, and then I became a manager, and I was a busboy at Mario's restaurant, and I, you know, packed bags at 12 and 13 and 14 at this place. And no experience, basically, for retail. But I said to her, I said, but I love cologne. I said, I collect cologne, and I get cologne for Christmas every year.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I looked so cute. I had, like, this black button-down shirt on, and I unbuttoned the buttons. It was like a little Guido with my hair slicked back.
Yeah.
She basically, I remember her kind of, like, just looking at me, like, kind of in a cutesy way. Like, she kind of almost laughed and was like, okay. She's like, I'm going to put you in the new store that's opening up on 19th and 5th. So... It happened.
The one with, like, the balconies around it or whatever.
19th and 5th.
I think so.
There's only one. It's been there since 2000.
Wait, what? Do you remember what cologne you were wearing to the interview?
Probably Jacquard Noir.
It's a classic. Yeah. I still like it when I smell it.
It's, I do too. It's, what's the word? It's, nostalgic. It reminds me of, like, of childhood.
So you didn't get a job as a makeup artist. You got a job as a fragrance
salesman? No, I didn't even know what a makeup artist was at that time, to be honest.
Okay,
I didn't even know being a makeup artist was a thing or, like, what it was. Nothing. I just had no idea about makeup. So I got a job as a fragrance consultant, a.k.a. they put me by the door to say welcome to Sephora to every single person that came in. And I used to get so frustrated because I'm like, I want to go and, like, work with people, you know?
Yeah.
And so women would come up to me because I was near the gondola, lipstick gondola, I remember. Mm-hmm. And they would come up to me and ask me for help. And this woman came in the first day of work and said, can you help me choose which color? And I was like, okay. And I just went and I, like, helped her. And I fell
Fake
in love.
Fake it till you
yeah,
make it.
I get emotional always, like, thinking about that. And I know that exact spot where I was always. And I always go to see it when I'm there. And it was like that was when I had the epiphany that I was like, I started touching the makeup and the lipsticks, and I was like, this is it. Like, I want to do this. This is what I'm going
to
do.
Do you remember what brand you steered her to?
It was the, I think it was the Sephora.
Like,
it was
private
the
label.
It was the Sephora. Yeah. Like, they had, like, hundreds of them. Colors, yeah. Like greens, blues, oranges, yellows. And it was the Sephora gondola, and I just helped her pick a color. And then from there, I became obsessed. I started, you know, sneaking out of the fragrance department and became friends with all the makeup artists, became friends with the manager who was the manager of the beauty department of color, we used to call it. And, you know, they would start giving me gratis brushes and gratis. And then I had a little shoebox at home, a little Nike shoebox, and I'd start collecting all my gratis, hiding it from my family, of course, because, you know, God forbid they found out that I was going to be a makeup artist.
Did they still think you were going to go be a teacher once you saved up money for college?
Yeah, I mean, listen, so my parents came here in the 70s, you know, obviously from nothing, from the mountains in Montenegro. You know, we're Albanian from Montenegro, and they came here for a better life. My mom especially, like, sacrificed so much and so hard, like, for us, you know what I mean? And so my whole life, it's those moments that I remember of, like, my mom struggling. And so, yeah, she wanted to come here and to make sure that her kids had a chance and an opportunity to go to college and to become successful, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think she thought a teacher or anything like that. She just thought school, business.
Right,
like, he's going to do something. He's not going to suffer the way I did.
Yeah.
And so I knew that, but I also knew that I wanted to become a makeup artist.
Yeah.
And I knew that that was what I had to do. And it was me thinking, like, everything from my childhood, like, all those moments of, like, me remembering, like, my mom's struggles and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Always stuck with me in everything that I did and every decision that I made in my early years, especially in my career. For example, like, I remember going to work with her one day on the bus, and she was literally, like, I think had 100-something fever. And instead of taking the train, she took the bus, which was, I think, a little bit more easy. But she never did that because it was, I think it was $2.50 more.
Yeah.
So that was, like, a luxury to her.
Yeah.
And me and her were taking it. And I just specifically remember, like, she was thirsty, like, dying of thirst. I mean, she was sick. And, like, she wouldn't buy a bottle of water because she wanted to save the dollar. Because she saved for us. So, like, it's those moments that I think of always and that I always thought of, especially in my early years. That, like, I can't have that life, and I have to, like, not only have a better life for myself, but, like, to give my mom a better life.
Yeah. It's what drives you, it seems.
Yeah. So, so that was basically, like, you know, that was a struggle. So it was that, and then it was sort of, like, telling my family that I'm going to be a makeup artist.
Yeah.
And then having to deal with, like, the rejection and the shame, you know, because they were embarrassed. They didn't want to tell anyone. They didn't want to tell the Albanian community that their son is doing makeup. You know, to my mom, that meant, like, she doesn't know. That meant, like, I'd be maybe spraying perfume on people's wrists for the rest of my life. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but she just thought, like, she came here for something more than that. And so I had to prove to them. And I had to.
Yeah.
It was the driving force that really just was everything to me in my life, and especially in my early years, and even to this day.
They must be proud of you now, first of all.
I'm
sure they are. But you started out in retail, and a lot of people, I think, know you because they think of you as, like, Makeup by Mario, and they think about your Instagram, but they think about seeing you with Kim Kardashian and all the celebrities that you do. But you really got your start in the editorial world, right?
Yes. Yeah, so after retail.
Yeah.
I went out and started researching heavily, you know, doing the right thing, really finding out everything about the industry that I needed to know, finding out who the big wigs were, the photographers, researching, studying, all that stuff. And then I started testing with photographers, like, immediately, any chance I could get, building my portfolio. And then I started meeting other makeup artists, assisting other makeup artists. And, you know, until I started working with the fashion big wigs, you know, the fashion makeup artists. And that was where I learned so much, not necessarily, you know, the work that I do with celebrities, but just it really groomed me and trained me, you know, in terms of product and set etiquette and, you know, being on set with the photographers like Stephen Klein every day and, you know, with the makeup artist Kabuki, and we were doing massive campaigns every day. I mean, you know, someone who's like 20, me like 19 or 20, 21 years old, to be doing those kinds of jobs every day was...
You were assisting at that point,
assisting,
right?
Yeah. And most of the time for free. You know, I got paid sometimes, but it was most of the time for free. And, you know, always kind of keeping a job on the side as well, just for income, whether it was retail or freelancing for a brand or whatever it was. But yeah, I come from, you know, years of that, of that industry. And it was, it was sort of after that, I had begun towards the end of, like, my assisting years, I had begun you know, definitely working a lot more on my own, starting to do some socialites in New York and starting to do some celebrity clients. And it was, I also made a decision at that time that I did not want to be a fashion makeup artist, meaning I didn't want to do just campaigns and editorials every day.
Why is that?
Why? Because I'm very realistic. That's number one. I'm also, I watch a lot. You know, I even growing up, I didn't speak much. I watched everything and I listened. And I kind of see my, I'm very aware of my surroundings. And at a young age, being an assistant on these sets, I just saw what it was like. And I saw that it was always the same teams of people for years, you know? And
it was like a mafia. The same six names of makeup artists.
And what's crazy is that 20 years later or 19 years later today, it's still the same six or seven people.
Yeah.
And so I knew, and I made a very conscious decision at that time. I'm like, I want to be successful. Like, I want a level of success that I want, that I have in my, that I'm having in my mind, you know, for my mom, for myself. Like, I want a level of success that, you know, that I don't think I'll ever be able to achieve. So I was just being realistic.
You're being practical.
Yeah. I don't think I'll ever be able to achieve this type of success that I want.
And you're not talking money. You're just talking like, I will be the best in this world.
Yeah. Like, not even the best in this world. Because I, oh, by far, I don't think I'm the best.
No, in the world of like editorial versus just, the world of.
Yeah. Like, I just wanted to be successful, you know?
Yeah.
And I just felt that I didn't have a chance in that world, you know? Yeah. And I was being realistic. And also, I enjoyed doing, I enjoyed more of the celebrity jobs, you know, doing the glam. And also, like, to be quite honest, I would much rather do a do and go with a celebrity than be on set for 18 hours on
Wait, what was the word you just said? A do and go?
A do and go. You don't know that?
A do and go?
Oh, yeah, that's what we call, like,
I know step and repeat. I don't know do and go.
No, step and repeat is like a red carpet. No, do and go means when you go to a celebrity's house or hotel, you do them and go.
I've never heard that, and I've interviewed tons of makeup.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, maybe that's just like you guys say that of it.
That's like the
you're
industry.
A do and
that's
go.
The industry standard. So there's
now
a,
I sound naive.
Like, oh yeah, there's a do and go, and then there's like a full day, like a full day rate, a full day, and then
there's
a do and go.
I see. Okay.
So I love a do and go, by the way. I'm the king of do and goes. I love like. Shit,
I want to use this in my regular life. I'm just going to do and go. This is a podcast right now. I'm in your apartment. Do and go.
Like, you know how some like makeup artists, they'll do several clients a day, like for a red carpet.
Yes.
So those are all do and goes because they're not with them all day. You know.
Okay, I totally get it.
Do it and go makes sense.
So
anyway, I would much rather do, and I much prefer doing do and goes or magazine covers, and you know, than doing an editorial with like eight models for 18 hours and making no money.
But what if you do? They go, and then you see the photos later, and you're like, she messed up the lipstick or something like that. Or you know how to set the makeup, so it's gonna look good.
Or you hope that, you know, you hope that they're not, you know, smart enough to not mess it up. But usually my clients are really good with that.
About the actual makeup. Now, when I think of, you know, Instagram, I think of a lot of, you know, things like contouring and baking and overlining. And I also think that a lot of those can be traced back to really the kind of work you did with Kim, you know, at the start. But you've always been really honest about the fact that you didn't, you know, quote unquote, invent any of those techniques. And, you know, we spoke a few years ago and you were really quick, and I really liked this, that you were really quick to pay homage to people like Kevin Aucoin or like Away Bandy. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think a lot of people don't get to hear that from you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, nothing is invented or created new. Everything you know has been happening, was already existing techniques and stuff like that. These are things that are so old. Like this is how the celebrity makeup artists and makeup artists did makeup in the 70s and 80s, you know. The difference is that no one knew, the masses didn't know about these tricks of the trade. You'd look in the, they would look on red carpets, magazine covers, or they'd see someone on stage or at the Emmys or Grammys, and they look so flawless, but no one knew how to achieve that. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that now everyone knows how to achieve it. You know, it's a certain sort of application that's not, that was never mainstream. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that makeup early in my career because I started assisting people and I learned all those tricks of the trade. And so, you know, it just so happened that the mix of like Kim and myself together, she happened to be a celebrity who just naturally just like started sharing it all and showing pictures and videos on her blog, and like no one had ever done that before. She started getting really busy, like where it was like a constant, she had a constant demand or need for makeup, you know what I mean? And so then she would start booking me for all her important stuff and press tours, and like she was always doing something. It's crazy, like she's a hard worker. In those early years, I mean, I would go to LA and stay for like 3 months at a time, like in a hotel, because she had work every single day.
Wow.
You know, traditional celebs, they'll promote an album or a movie or something. But like with her, it was literally just 365 days a year.
Wow.
Right.
Social
media lets you show the pieces that go into the makeup. But it also sort of brings people like you to the forefront. Other than Kevin Aucoin, like you didn't always know makeup artists' names back in the day, like a regular person.
Yeah.
And even though you now have made a name for yourself, you kind of strike us as someone who doesn't really want the limelight. So what drives you? Do you want to be famous? Do you want to be known? Or is there something else driving you?
That's really interesting. I always kind of like think about this. I don't want to be famous, no. Like, I always say, like, jokingly with my friends and stuff, like, I don't wish, like, a huge level of fame upon anyone. It's like, I don't want that life. Like, it's not me at my core. I look at it like this way. So, like, because I struggle with it, I'm given opportunities, right? And a lot of those opportunities require me going to events and doing meet and greets and taking photos or doing a red carpet, you know, brand events and all types of things. These are all opportunities that I'm given as a makeup artist. I have two options. I cannot take the opportunity and sit home and just, you know, not be as successful. Or I can suck it up and do it, even though I don't like getting dressed and I hate having to fix my hair and put bronzer on and all this stuff, like being in front of the camera, because I'm self-conscious. I'm insecure like a lot of other people.
Really?
You know? Yeah. And so...
He needs a podcast.
You know, so the other option is you suck it up and you sacrifice and you do it because, it you know, the rewards are greater. I always think, like, are the rewards greater than the sacrifice, you know, that it takes to get, you know, to the reward? And, it, you know, usually they are. If not, then I wouldn't. But
what do you ever get self-conscious about? I feel like you're, like, you know, one of the biggest makeup artists in the world. You have, like, a really cool life. At least it seems that way. Like,
are you kidding me? What do you get self-conscious about?
Yeah.
So, like, many things.
I mean, cute.
Thank you. just like really crazy. I mean, just I don't like my left side photographs. I get self-conscious about my nose or that my face is round or, you know, social media, I think, adds to all that because, you know, back in the day when I used to go to work, there was never a camera there. Like, I could go in sweatpants and a hat and look like shit and it didn't matter. But now it's like almost every single job that I do requires me to be on camera somehow. They have behind the scenes cameras that they want. You know, I do so many brand contracts, so many brand partnerships and contracts. And then I have the masterclass. It's like everything. Sometimes it's like 3 days a week where I have to buy a new outfit and I have to buy a new jacket and I have to buy, you know, fix my hair and get a haircut. It's like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like that part, like, I don't care for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I could have the success that I always wanted my whole life, without any of that, I would definitely take that.
It does sound very stressful, a lot to think about at once. You mentioned the masterclass. That's, you know, didn't you trademark masterclass or something? Like, isn't
yeah,
that
I'm not
your
sure.
thing?
I'm not sure. Well, I trademarked the masterclass.
Oh, the masterclass,
but
yeah.
I'm not sure if I was actually able to, because
okay.
The masterclass is too broad of a term.
But it's your thing. When I think of the masterclass, it's Mario. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
What do they, so when you do these classes, yeah. What are people, like, what are the questions you get most often still? Or not still,
you know, it's
general.
Not like 95 or probably more than 95% of my students, which a lot of people don't know, are makeup artists of different levels and also aspiring makeup artists. So these are people that really want to learn makeup. In fact, like, sometimes if I'll have a celebrity guest, like, a lot of people get annoyed because they're like, we don't care. You know, we want to learn the makeup. Like, don't, you know, we
yeah.
don't care about anything else, you know?
That's none cool. of the chit-chat. Let's get down to
yes,
the technical.
Yes, yes. And that's what I prefer, too, because I know that they're there to learn for a reason. And that's why the whole masterclass started. You know, it wasn't about money, because back then I didn't make money from it. I lost money
yeah.
from it.
Oh, wow.
It's, you know, this thing happened with Kim where we did a tutorial on YouTube, and it went on YouTube. And then all of a sudden, like, I remember walking out of the train and I was bombarded with messages and emails from people around the world asking me makeup questions. And then I was like, holy shit, like these people, if they don't live in New York or LA or London or Paris, like, they'll never know, like, the tricks of the trade. And so that's when I decided, like, oh my God, I'm going to have a class where I'm going to have them come and I'll teach them all the tricks of the trade. Like, just the way, like, they saw a taste of it on YouTube with the Kim video. And that's how the masterclass was born. You know, it wasn't out of money. You know, a lot of
yeah.
the masterclasses nowadays, you know, people do them because they see the success and they want the money.
Yeah, it's like an event almost, not an actual
yes.
learning experience.
So, you know, was the reason for it. So all the questions I get, to answer your question, are career stuff. They want to know, you know, aside from all the techniques, because I always say, like, I'm not the most talented makeup artist by far, you know, but there's a way to approach makeup, and especially more so now that we're so inundated with you know, techniques on YouTube and social media, people are just seeing over and over the same thing. It gets embedded into their brain. So when they come to the masterclass, they learn how to actually approach a face. Put all that stuff aside. Put all the trends aside. Put all social
media
aside.
Like the stripes down both sides of your nose.
Yes, all that stuff aside. They learn how to approach a face. Like, you know, how to think about the makeup they're about to do. How to not do the same exact makeup on every person.
Okay, that's a good
Oh, God.
How to not, how to not mess up someone's face, you know, because you can do a disservice to someone's face if you're just doing the same thing that everyone else does on social media, for example. Mm-hmm. They learn so much. Like, it's honestly, for most of them, like, just according to what they tell me after what they write, it's mind-blowing for them. Like, they didn't realize all of this stuff, you know, how to approach makeup and when not to do something and how to build softly. Like, people think that, you know, makeup it can be intense. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's really important, I feel like, to know and teach, especially artists or aspiring artists, when to hold back, when not to do certain things, you know, how to approach.
It's almost more important than when to do them, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, about contour, that's my thing. I always tell them, because, of course, everyone thinks, like, oh, you know, quote-unquote contour king, and they think I'm going to do some insane contour, and it's always just extremely natural, and, like, they're like, well, what do you mean? Like, we thought you were going to, like...
I came for the contour.
Right. You know, well, I mean, that's not why they come. But, I always tell them when I'm teaching contour, I say it's more important to know when not to contour than it is to know how to contour.
Like, if someone has a super skinny nose, but then they just automatically start contouring it.
Right.
Like,
because they think that, you know, because they know how to do it, then everyone needs it.
Yeah, well,
no, I don't always contour at work, you know. I have certain clients that are super glam that love that stuff, and I give it to them. But then I have other clients where when I do editorials, I don't even...
Like, does Christy Turlington need contour? Probably not, you know?
Well, she'd probably wear it. No, she won't. No, she won't. Not Christy Turlington.
I was thinking of something with a very angular face. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah.
Someone like Kate
Bosworth, like I work with, I don't contour her. Like, I don't go anywhere near her with contour.
Okay,
When I do editorials, contour. Like, never contour, really. Never, you know?
Interesting.
Mm-mm. That's interesting, yeah, really. Okay, another thing you put up, besides the makeup, you have put up a lot of great Instagram content that isn't just all your looks. Something you put up, I mean, this is a couple of years ago now, you put up your portfolio. It was like a real physical portfolio, like a hardback portfolio. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if you don't even know it.
I remember that.
I know I'm talking to our listeners. For those who don't know what like a real portfolio book is, when I say back in the day, I mean like up until maybe 5 years ago, people would have...
Remember we used to get those neoprene sleeves? There would be like hundreds of them around the office.
With
hundreds.
The poor messengers, they would come onto the floor, you know, and they would drop off the books and the photographers, the makeup artists, the hairstylists. Even Jen and I, I'm speaking for you. I still have in my bedroom my book of my editorial clips.
Yep.
Now everything, especially for visual people like yourself, is online, it's on social media. So you did this great post about how your agent or something said like your book is, you know, they don't need your book anymore. It's really about your Instagram.
It's basically irrelevant. We don't need portfolios anymore.
So what kind of feedback did you get from that post?
I don't remember. I got a lot of feedback for sure.
Because I thought it was really a watershed moment.
Yeah, I think it was mostly positive. You know, see, I'm not the type, like, I never do stuff. Like, it was a bit controversial. I never do stuff like that, but I just really felt strongly about it because of what had just happened with the, you know, having the portfolio returned to me, like, a day or two before. And then just, like, really, and that was around the time, too, when I really started thinking about social media and this shit is all changing that we're, like, this field that we're in. And that was when I made, like, a really serious decision to take, you know, to really focus on that and to think ahead and to become part of it and not like, you know, a hater of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like to join in with it if I want to move forward and succeed.
Were you ever a hater?
No.
He's an early adopter.
No, I'm not a hater. Like people always, you know, it's funny because a lot of like celebrity makeup artists or my peers or, you know, people who've started 15 plus years ago, like myself, mm-hmm. you know, they can get upset sometimes and they can get really vocal about, you know, influencers. Like, I love influencers. I fucking watch YouTube myself. Like, mm-hmm. why would you hate on them? You know, like, they have a different style than you, fine, but who cares? You have a different style too. Like, maybe they don't like your style, but, you know, are they calling it out? Like, this makeup sucks because it's so natural. Like, who cares? It's like, everyone has their own style. What is there to hate? You know what I mean? If maybe it has to do with, like, the amount of success someone has that they're not able to achieve for some reason, but, you know, I just feel like these young kids or these influencers, if they have the ability to become successful, like what I was saying earlier, like, are you supposed to just sit in your room and be like, no, I'm not going to take these opportunities. No, I don't want that contract. No, don't give me that money because I just want to be the same as I always was. You know, right. Like, you take the opportunities. Like, who cares how old you are? You know, that's how I feel about that.
Now, we were also talking before we got on the air about editors. Like, you know, you're in an interesting position because you're not like this new kid on the block where, you know, you've only worked with like, you know, digital media and influencers. No. You are like, to me, kind of like, don't be offended when I say this, but kind of old school. Like, you know.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I'm old school. Like, you are, I feel old school.
No, but like, you're talking about, you know, where you learned, you know, your skills from. You put in the homework. You read the books. You assisted. I mean, old school in that way. Like, you're not looking for, like, I'm going to make a YouTube video. Like, hold this camera. Like, why aren't I famous yet? Like,
yeah.
You have that same kind of mindset. But when it comes to editors, like, what is your take on that? I felt like you were a little bit kind of like a little bit of a question mark there.
Okay, so here, can I be honest with you guys?
Yes.
Wait, is every
please.
Editor going to hate me though? Like, I don't want to, because no, I do so much.
No, it's like a nuanced conversation. I'm not asking you to be like yay or nay.
Okay, here's the deal with my, because no, I do
love
editors.
You're talking to two editors, like, no. You know, I'm asking you to.
I definitely don't hate editors. I was just teasing you, but yeah. here's I think it's like a it comes naturally, like this frustration maybe from the early days of, I used to work so hard and I put in all the work, and no, people didn't really know that. And it's because I became very popular, like when I started doing Kim, and after I started doing Kim. Now, mm-hmm. Before that, like, you know, I was an assistant. I was on the sets with Steven Klein and with the biggest makeup artists, yeah. And fashion campaigns. And you know, I come from that world. You know,
but
what
I think
mean?
A lot of people don't know that. That's
right.
The
so
thing.
They didn't know that. And so I feel like I got put into this kind of bubble. I remember when I started doing Kim, because she went through it, obviously, as well. You guys know how it mm-hmm. was in the earlier days. It's like reality stars were looked down
I've
upon.
I've been in magazines where it's like, we're not putting those people in the magazine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, like, I was in that, you know. I was in that firsthand. And so I feel like I would struggle, you know, and my agents would, too, in the earlier days, like, you know, of just feeling like, there was, like, feeling like editors in that world were so elitist and kind of against me. You know what I mean? Because I was doing Kim, you know, because that was my choice to do Kim. And because, you know, I did things a certain way, different from the way everyone else was doing them. And so I feel like, I always felt like this weird, just this weird vibe, like that they were elitist and they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't accept me, or they wouldn't, you know, put me in their magazine because I'm, you know, I'm Makeup MR, I'm Kim's makeup artist. You know what I mean? So in the early years, before social media really became a thing, there was that whole thing that, yeah. I struggled with. Because like, when you know that, you know, or even like in the earlier days with Kim, like when she started getting covers, like photographers and editors, they would never want to use me because then they would think, oh, no, because he's going to do really heavy makeup on Kim.
Right.
I've heard that from hairstylists too, with regular clients. And the client gets booked, but they won't book the hairstylist.
Right.
Right.
They want their own team. They don't want the celebrity
team. Which is natural.
Team.
I mean, they still do want that, but I think it's like people knowing that, like, you know, people just didn't know that I'm able to do other stuff. And so, like, there was that whole thing. And then when the whole contour thing happened, like, I used to literally, like, fight with my agency all the time and with the PR who was in the agency, because I would try to make people not call me that. I would fight it. And I would resist against it because mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I don't want to be known as the contour king. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That's not what I'm about, you know? And then it got to a point where I was like, you know, it's not until I accepted it that I started really, like, moving forward and good things started coming from it, you know? I started getting great opportunities and great jobs from it. And, you know, so I'm like, yeah, you want to call me the Contour King now? You know, go ahead.
Knock yourself out.
So that's where my frustration. Now I'm totally fine with the editors and stuff. You know.
Cool. We're friends now?
Yes.
Okay.
PR and stuff, like, that's, like, a part, you know, it goes with, I guess, that fame thing. Like, you know, I don't love doing interviews. You know, it's one of those things where, like, oh my God, it's like the extra part of your job where you have to answer the questions and you have to, you know, it's always required of me because of all the brand contracts. It's just one of those things, part of the jobs that are not my favorite.
Yeah.
And so
you're
have
to say no too, you know?
Well,
I think contractually you can't.
Not well, a lot of things are contractual.
Okay. You know what I mean?
I love it, of course, when it's like something that I like, but like, you know, like the makeup questions, it's like, oh, so boring. And I know you guys are going to probably ask me makeup questions. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
But like, you know, how do you do this and how do you do that? It's like, oh, come to my masterclass.
Well, that's kind of how we started the podcast. We were like, we wanted to ask the deeper questions that aren't maybe going to make it into the pages of the magazine.
Which I love. I love that.
That's,
you know,
more fun.
It's more fun. Yeah,
sure. Like, they want to get to know
now,
you.
Now, how do I do that?
No, but like, that's why I brought up thinking about, like, Timothy. Because it's like, I feel like people...
Oh,
like,
Timothy from Nordstrom.
Yeah,
we're back
Timothy,
on him?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, but it's like, there's a thing about, like, the artist. like people get so hooked on like makeup, but it's not just like, oh, I'm so obsessed with this compact, like not just makeup beauty. Like they want to know the people. They want to know, like, yeah, they want that closeness. Yeah, there's a fandom. I mean, that's why Moj started BeautyCon. Like it's a fandom. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's really cool what you have going on.
Thank you.
I was going to ask you just because we talked about this a little bit, but you do get pigeonholed is almost the word I was thinking of when you were saying that. Like people thought of you a certain way. You talked about a few things you'd want people to know. Is there anything else that hasn't really like come to the forefront about you? They're like, why don't people know that I, you know, worked with, who did you mention? Stephen Klein or whoever. Like,
yeah.
Well, now we know you worked at the Bronx Zoo too. So that's good.
Now I think as I get older, like I could honestly care less. It's not like I don't care. I feel like I don't have anything to prove anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care anymore. And I feel like once you stop caring about that stuff, and it was probably silly of me to care anyway in the beginning, but it's, you know, because I wanted to be successful and I wanted to be respected. And so I feel like in the earlier days, you know, I felt like maybe I wouldn't be able to achieve my goals because people think something of me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now it doesn't bother me. Like, I mean, I say, even today, I got requested to do like a cover, a certain Vogue cover from another country, like from one of like these photographer team that's like one of the best in the world. And I'm like, literally told my agent, I'm like, no, this is not possible. Like, they would never request me. This
you
is
still
fucking.
Don't think you're at that point.
Literally,
in your
she's like, Mario, like, relax. They actually requested you twice before. Like, I'm like, there's no fucking way they requested
were
me.
You
like,
were
they
you excited?
Hate me.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do it because I have other things going on, like in Sydney and blah blah blah. But you know, it's like I don't
so
care
you still
anymore.
Get excited, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of our listeners will not have the opportunity to attend the masterclass just for, you know, geography or whatnot.
You never know. What if I do, like, a free one?
Well, but what if they're based in, like, Milwaukee?
What if I do a YouTube video?
Oh.
You know, you guys know I don't have a YouTube, right? I don't. Like,
I know
I
you don't have a YouTube.
You appear on others.
Yeah.
Well, no, just Kim, really. But
don't you have to pay for Kim's?
I don't
have to break
not
through
on
her,
the,
like.
Not on the YouTube channel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I don't. I've never actually done a full makeup on YouTube. Like, there, you can't be found.
So what's that about? Why?
Because I need to teach it in person. It takes 4 hours. Like, mm-hmm. How can I? I have to break it down to them, and it's an energy that I feel like I have. I know when they don't understand something, and they're shooting.
You need to see their faces responding.
It's a feeling. Like, I just know, and so I have to like truly explain it. Like, it's not just like, oh, put this eyeliner on and start thin and go thicker there. It's like, why are you putting this eyeliner on this shape? If she has this shape, it's going to be this kind of eyeliner. How do you make this eyeliner last throughout the whole day? How do you build it? How you can go from a softer gray to brown or add black for this reason? It's going to make this certain line. There's so much goes to it. You can never, ever, ever learn that on YouTube. It's not possible. That being said, I would like to maybe start a YouTube one day.
You have to. Oh, my God. I mean, there'd be addicts.
I'm really scared. I keep thinking about it, and obviously my followers ask me, but I'm just like, the drama that goes on in that world, like, I don't want to be...
Turn the comments
off. Turn comments off.
Right? Yeah, but then people start, like, I feel
then
like...
Then they hate you for turning the comments off. Like,
it just, you get exposed to all this type of drama, and then people just all of a sudden want to know, I don't know, I feel like it's, like, a level of, like, fame that I'm really scared
but
of.
Didn't you, like, is that because you've seen it happen with your client, or is that because...
No, it's because, you know, what I see, because I just
didn't
started...
Didn't you learn some tips from Kim about how to deal?
No. I'm not like that type, you know. I'm just kind of like, she does her thing and I do my thing.
Okay.
And, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see it happening on YouTube because I watch YouTube now. I'm a recent lover of YouTube.
Who do you watch? Do you have some?
Shane Dawson's my favorite.
Yeah.
I started watching him because I love documentaries. A lot of people. I watch James Charles. I think he's really entertaining. I don't watch that many tutorials, so they're a little boring to me. But
okay, so we were going to ask you for some makeup tips, but it feels too reductive right now. So I'm going to, because like
no,
you said.
No,
I'm still going to ask.
A couple of freebies.
Yeah.
But it does seem like you approach every face differently.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just be selfish then. Instead of asking for a generalized tip, I need help with one thing, and I'll ask that, and we'll see if so my upper lip line is disappearing as I get... old, up in years, like the demarcation. Like, the, you know, between the reddish part and
the
vermilion edge is what it's called, right?
Yeah, that's what I think, vermilion edge.
And so I've been, like, using lip liner more, but I just feel like it's not doing it because it wears off or whatever. How do you get your lip line back, like the edge of your lip, without getting
like the
filler?
Outer corners, you mean?
Yeah, like the
whole thing.
Yeah,
the whole thing?
Like along here.
I mean, you got to just slightly...
You have a mustache that, like, sort of is sort of doing that for you. Maybe you should grow a mustache.
No, don't do that. I would just say, I mean, honestly, there's no like major magic trick to it. You know, you just gotta overline it a little bit, you know, and if it wears off, you have to reapply it. You know,
do you do one continuous line, or are you a feathery stroke kind of pencil?
Actually, on your lips, on your particular lips, I would not fill so much on the outer corners. I would kind of start like a little bit more inwards and focus more on this whole center area,
the Cupid Bowie part,
blending it down to the, you know, otherwise I think if you go all the way down, your lips are going to look just too wide for your face. So
yeah,
I would go...
because it gets pointy here at the edges.
Yes.
Like and if then, I had a rounded lip.
Not only that, but you're also going to make your lips appear sad, then it's going to bring your face down.
Oh God,
so for your particular face, I would focus on here and here, and then kind of almost like lifting this area. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I have another question. It's more in general.
Yeah.
What's a good way to make like the skin just like not look tired? If one of your clients just looks kind of tired and
got off
just
a plane.
Like yeah, or just yeah, like they're having a stressful day, and they just pop in your
chair for a friend.
They just pop into your chair for like a few minutes. What are just the couple of things that you do?
So that's an interesting question. So it's tricky because what I do for my clients at work, like for red carpets and shoots, is so different than what I would tell someone to do at home for a viewer who's watching this. Okay. Because what I do at work, it's way too much. No one's got time to do any of it.
Okay.
Like, I would never do it on myself. Like, never. Honestly, like,
What do you do for yourself then? Yeah.
Okay, after I turned, after I turned 34, 35 maybe, I really started seeing or experiencing and feeling kind of like what most women feel like, where it's like they feel like they can't leave without having a little zhuzh, a little something. Like, mm-hmm. I feel that now, like, because I just feel, like, tired. I feel like I'm getting older, like, I'm pale. You know, my veins are coming through.
Such a nightmare. Isn't it horrible?
Dude, it's fucking horrible. Like, the brow thing. Like, my brows, I was always so fine with my brows. Like, I feel like I look crazy now without something filled in my eyebrows a little bit.
They fade sort of, right?
Because they thin out. Like, my outer corners are non-existent. And I'm like, what is happening to my life?
Like, I didn't do anything different. They just stopped growing there or something.
Yes. And so, like, what I do, you guys would laugh if you actually saw, like, what I do. I literally just use, like, the cheapest things on myself. Like, everything that is going to go in the garbage, I'll just take and use it on myself because I'm too lazy, like, to – you guys would laugh. But I like a little tinted moisturizer that's, like, a little deeper than my skin.
Okay.
That makes me feel really – it kind of brings back life, and it brings back, like, a natural glow, you know. It has, mm-hmm. like, a nice moisture to it. And then concealer, of course, like, especially around the nose area, under the eyes, and brow for me. But what? I would say for girls – what I think it makes a huge difference is curling of the lashes, which I know most people don't do. Like, you know, my sisters and just...
Oh, well, I got a lash perm, so...
Oh, you do?
Not anymore.
It
was great while I had it, but it grows out kind of wonky.
You know, but like concealer and...
What's your cheapy brow pencil that you're using?
I don't use cheap brow pencils. I use Anastasia brow pencils.
Oh,
but
see? It only extends so far.
No, it's more like the powder I use. If I put tinted moisturizer on, you know, I'll just throw a little powder on. But the one in my medicine cabinet is it's a L'Oreal powder that I bought probably 7 years ago in the drugstore. You know, like, and I still use it. Meanwhile, 4 feet away, I have literally 1,000 like luxury powders. It's weird. I don't know why I do that.
You were saying something about the eyelid. Were you pointing to the eyelid, or that's all you do is just curl the lashes?
Curl the lashes. Well, like the eyelid gets like mine. They get veiny and they get like, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you're gonna put tinted moisturizer on or concealer, put mm-hmm. some on your eyelids too.
What's something that women do all the time that's like you just shake your head and it's like, oh, like no one's doing this right. Like something that you see that's done wrong all the time.
I'm not the type to
You don't sit on the subway and look at people's makeup like us.
I do.
There's something I can't do.
I
right?
do, so, but I honestly you know? Find it like there's like a part of me. I love seeing like, you know, how do you say it? Pedestrian, I guess. You know, I love seeing real women, you know, I love seeing real women's makeup. In fact, you know, I guess what people don't know about me is that I love natural makeup, and my favorite is when a woman has no makeup on is my favorite. I just love the look of it. It's so, I don't know, it's charming to me. It's sweet. It's like, it's real, you know? And so same thing goes for when I see people that do their own makeup. I don't look at it like judging, because I don't expect you to be like fully beat and glamorous. Like number one, you would look weird in the subway or like at, you know, at Starbucks. And number two, like, I don't expect you to put in all that effort and know those things. So like, you know, it's like my sisters. Like, I don't look at anyone's face and judge. It's like, it's cute to me. Like, it's charming. You know, I don't know. I kind of love to know like how real women do their makeup. I like that.
I can show you.
Yeah, but you can't. You don't count because you guys are like editors. You guys know.
Makeup on right now,
I'm still every day is an experiment. Like there are things like people think beauty editors know how to really like you know that they're doing some like you know amazing professional job. There's still things I'm like I don't know. Right.
Yeah, remember I looked at you in the sun today and she had literal...
No, thanks, Jen.
Okay, never mind. I won't say
Yeah.
No, I think it's cute. Like, I'm looking at your eyeliner right now and I'm like, you know, like it goes down on the corner, you know, and so I'm like,
that's... not supposed to.
Like, that's... I know, but like, that's so... That's like so cute to me.
We had a long day.
That's cute to me. Like, I like that. I like that.
It was going like straight across or a little bit like more lifted this morning, but like that was at 7:30 when I put it on. So I don't have a... I don't have a team. I don't have a Mario.
This is less intimidating though. See, having it so perfect is like intimidating for a real woman.
That's a very good point. You mentioned the Anastasia brow pencil as a favorite. What are some other favorites you've been loving lately? There are so many products now. Help us cut through
just
the
any
clutter.
Product in general, you mean?
Yeah, sure.
So I've been loving... I started using the La Mer foundation recently, the liquid foundation.
Oh, you like it.
Kind of obsessed, yeah. I used cream foundations for many, many years, and I just started incorporating... I mean, not just, but probably like 4 years ago, I started really bringing in a lot of... and trying lots of different liquid foundations, which I love. And, you know, as the trends change, like, I don't use a lot of powder anymore. And, you know, I just like the skin to be really glowy now. And so the La Mer foundation is one of my favorites right now. I love Troy Surratt's new concealers that he just came out with.
Concealers?
Surratt Beauty.
Yeah, no, I know. We know. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've tried these.
Too, but I didn't see
He just came out with them. Or actually, I don't even know if they're available yet.
Maybe they just are for special people like you.
No, no. He sent PR out. But I like them. I use them actually on myself because I'm too stingy to put them in my kit. no, but I like...
Stuff is good quality. Yeah.
Yeah, I love his makeup. And what else is really good as of late? I mean, my classics like that I love, like the Laura Mercier Tinted Moisturizer.
That stuff is so good.
So good.
Or the Laura Mercier like Flawless Fusion Concealer, which I love because it, like honestly, it doesn't... There's not many concealers out there that don't get into the lines. So this one like is really good if you have like a little bit of fine lines.
What about mascara-wise? This podcast is called Fat Mascara, so I have to ask.
Oh, I forgot about that. My all-time favorite is for 19 years, L'Oreal Voluminous. And
it's one of hers.
I try all the time because I don't want to get stuck in like, you know, rut. I try all the time to bring in new mascaras and I try them and literally like I'm just like my assistant's like she knows already that I'm not going to keep it in the kit. So she just...
That you keep trying though. You got to keep your skills fresh.
Always.
Try the new stuff.
You know what? The Milk one I tried recently and I don't hate it.
The Kush one? Oh, okay.
I used it yesterday on a model on set. Yeah.
Do you use your hands a lot or brushes and sponges more? Because like the skin that you do is always so like flawless and just... gorgeous. So yeah. I'm curious like how you get that finish
it
besides
depends
being
on,
talented.
It depends on the client. Like so if I don't use my fingers if I'm doing a more heavy, like if I have a client that likes full coverage and powder, like I don't use my fingers for that. I use like sponge and I use brushes. If I'm
Are
working
you a latex sponge or like a beauty blender guy?
Oh, beauty blender, like okay. Hands down beauty blender. Okay. So that's like I use like 8 of them for each application. If I'm doing like editorial, like fashion stuff or beauty shoots, I definitely will use my fingers more on models. Mm-hmm. Also, because I don't mind that sort of like personal space with the model. Like I don't, you know, I don't care to like touch them or like, you know.
Yeah.
With celebrity, there's like a level of, I don't know if you call it respect or something. I just don't like to get too into their personal space, meaning to touch them. So I always kind of try to have a little barrier between, you know what I mean? So I use more brushes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've always been like that. Even with Kim, like I, no matter how close I am with them, or how no, there's always like a level of respect for one of my clients that I don't like to cross ever. And so I feel like I use more brushes, you know, brushes and sponges definitely for celebrity. For models, I'm more like, you know, get in with my fingers.
Right, because that's their job. Yeah. And what about for you? Like, what about you in terms of, you came in here smelling amazing.
You were a fragrance consultant back in the day. What's...
So you're an expert. So tell us what's
You're basically
what's
an expert.
On.
You're basically a perfumer.
Wait, what's the question?
For what fragrances do you wear?
Oh my God. You guys, I have so many fragrances. I collect fragrances.
As do we.
My favorites are Tom Ford, hands down, you know?
Like everything?
Everything. I just love every product that man puts out. Every product. Even the ones I don't love the smell of, like like the fucking Fabulous one, I don't love the smell of it.
Me neither, but the name's so good.
Yeah, and they sent me like PR the other day. I finally got on the Tom Ford PR list after all these freaking years, and I didn't even ask. They emailed me to ask me, but they sent me like a bunch of the new, you know, fragrances, and they sent me fucking Fabulous, which I already had. But like I've been, you know, just kind of spraying it every day, just because I just love Tom Ford fragrances. But I have my favorite would be probably Ombre Leather. Mm-hmm. I have like this really massive bottle that my sister bought me 1 year, And it's like you take it out, it's like an oil. Mm. And I just love that one.
Nice.
Yeah. So what didn't we ask you that we should have asked you as this winds down?
Shucks, I wish I would have thought of this before,
so
you came.
I'm sorry putting you on the spot.
No, you know what? Just from what I see and from what I read, the industry is so, it's changing every day, and it's going so fast every day. I think that a lot of people, and including a lot of my students who come to my master classes, I see that people are feeling hopeless because it's weird. There's so many more opportunities because of Instagram, and everyone, you know, there's all these brands that are coming out, all these products, so there's more opportunities, but at the same time, there's more competition. People feel that they're working hard, and they feel that they're not being seen. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but, like, just do not give up. Like, when I tell you, do not give up and do not say no to things. Like, if you're available for something or if you can make it happen, absolutely 100% make that happen. Some of the most critical parts of my career in my life were things that I didn't want to do that I almost said no to. Thank God I didn't, because those were like some of the most pivotal parts of my career. You know, and I have a lot of friends who did say no a lot and, you know, are just, you know, they talk to me about it now. And it's like, I wish I did that job. I wish I said yes to it when you did, you know. Don't say no. Sacrifice. You have to sacrifice. You can't expect to live like this amazing, you know, glamorous life every day and just kind of go and come as you please and then want success. There are some people that are going to get overnight success, 100%.
Yeah.
It's possible now with social media, and God bless those that can do it, because I wish I could have done. I mean, I wish.
It's,
you know,
funny, and some people still think, oh, you did. But now I think they were realizing, no, you put in 15 hard years of work before like the success.
Yeah, like real struggles. You know what I mean? Like real, real struggles.
So don't say no. Always show up. Yeah.
Always show up, obviously. You know, be respectful. You want to, you know, my mom always said she wasn't, you know, an educated woman because she wasn't allowed to go to school, you know, when she grew up. But, you know, her thing was just always, just be a good person no matter what you do. Be a good person, Mario. Every day she would just say that. Or if I'd come home and complain about something, she'd say, no matter what, you make the right decision. What's the best thing to do from a good heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you just do that, I think that eventually, because when I was like a teenager and a young kid, I'd be like, oh, like if I just keep being a good person, like what if no one else is going to be a good person, you know? It's like you think like a kid.
It's karma.
But karma. Yeah. It's a thing. I think it's a real thing. And so just try to be a good person. And again, don't give up. Don't be sloppy. Don't be messy. Pay attention to your social media. It's so freaking important. And, you know, just keep going.
Thanks. That's good advice. Yeah. Thank you. You were awesome. Yeah.
Thank you guys. So
that's
much.
It.
Yep.
That's
painless,
that's
right?
Basically,
that was so easy.
Yeah, it didn't hurt,
I feel like,
right?
I know you guys.
Well, we spent quite a bit of time together today.
Dang, that wasn't that long.
Thanks, Mario.
Oh, thank you, Mario.
Thank you.
Bye.
It's time to raise a wand. You ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay, so Jess and I don't know if you've mentioned this in a while, but we both share this fear of bad breath. It unites us. It's one of the first things we talked about with each other, that we have a pact that if ever we have bad breath, it's okay. We have to tell each other.
Wait, do you remember the mantra?
What's the mantra?
If it smells, you must tell.
If it smells, you must tell. Yes. So I'm always on the lookout for a breath-fighting product, of which the best, of course, is water. People, hydrate. Your breath smells better. It's fine.
I'm drinking water right now.
However, sometimes gum, mints, it doesn't cut it. You know what does cut it?
What?
I'm raising a wand to Listerine Ready Tabs.
Oh, those are, I
they're
saw the
new.
Commercial.
They're
the,
so
the commercial's
fucking amazing.
Cool.
Okay. That Listerine little plastic sheets, remember those?
Oh, the film.
I had an old boss who used to always give me them, so I thought that I had bad breath, but really she just was sharing.
It's like, oh,
you're
burn.
Putting a piece of freaking cellophane in your mouth. It dries it out even more. I think there's like some sort of alcohol in it or something. But the Ready Tabs, okay, I'm putting one in right now so you can experience this with me. Your first,
the guy's eyes bug out in the commercial.
Oh, do they? Yeah. I don't watch TV, so I don't know, but you chew. To activate your tablet, then mush it, swish.
This is so gross.
I don't know.
They don't do that in the commercial. They don't hear the swishing.
I don't know what's in there, but definitely activates the salivary glands. Okay, listen, I probably should have swished a little longer. Salivatory glands? I don't know. More moisture comes into your mouth. And then you're probably grossed out because you're like, okay, now you've got this whole mouthful of what is mouthwash. I should want to spit it out. But weirdly, it doesn't taste bad. And you just swallow it like a nice minty refreshing tea almost.
Do you think they had like NASA level techs on this? Because I feel like how did they do that?
I don't know, but it makes your mouth wetter. Somehow it turns into enough moisture just from this tablet that you can swish it around like it's mouthwash. But then it's not so much that you're like swallowing a gulp of mouthwash. I mean, maybe there's some plaque and some food debris going down my stomach, but that's where it'll go anyway. These things are amazing. I don't know. I feel like you have fresh breath, but then you're also re-moisturized. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Unsponsored, unpaid. I truly just think they're good. All right, what are you raising a wand to?
Okay. I am raising a wand to a hair product, and I love it. I love it so much. I haven't loved a hair product like this in a long time. Love Beauty and Planet, Argan Oil and Lavender, Smooth and Serene, and Leave-In Smoothie Cream.
That's a hell of a name.
Okay. It's the Purple Lavender Smoothie Cream. I remember we went to that event a couple years ago. I never tried that.
It's
a year and a half ago.
I like the whole line, but I didn't.
Oh my God, this is so good. First of all, if you love lavender like I love lavender, it smells like lavender, but not like the kind that's like old and farty. Like it smells like a nice lavender. It's a lightweight cream, very lightweight. I just put a few pumps in my hand and I put on like the ends of my hair when they're looking like dry and like broom like, and it makes them come together. But
maybe you have a little ponytail breakage.
Yes, exactly. And I just like, you know, it just brings them together without looking like I put gloppy hair cream in it, you know, like just like natural. And then I go back. Sometimes I add a little more because it's so light and sheer that you can really kind of layer.
Like a lotion almost, not
a cream. Perfect. Lotion, not a cream. And a thing that is really nice, Love Beauty Planet. It's a brand you can feel good about. It's very like eco-friendly. Everything's made from recycled packaging. You know, no animal testing, all of that good stuff. You know, they're a brand that when they came out.
And at Mass, right?
And at Mass, sorry, it's so cheap. It's Target online, it's $6.99.
I feel like that's how much the ready tabs cost, for God's sakes.
The hair products, as we know, even drugstore getting so expensive, like they're all behind like plastic now, like it's crazy.
Yes.
Right? We can talk about that another day. But something I just really want to say about Love Beauty and Planet, when we went to the event, a lot of people were like, but what, they're owned by Unilever? People were like, okay, well, you know, you're all eco now, but what about the other brands? I think it's so great that Unilever is doing something so on such a mass level that is so eco-friendly and is all about recycling and all about, you know, cruelty-free and yada, yada, yada. It's very exciting to see these big brands taking these very big initiatives. And the fact that the product is amazing is also fantastic. Nice. So definitely give it a try. Smells fantastic.
Good one.
Thank you so much for listening. We're growing because of people like you telling your friends and fam and all that. But if you really want to help us out, which would be amazing, please go over to iTunes and write us a little review or just throw us some stars.
5, please.
That would be incredible.
And if you want to know where to find any of the people or places or things we talked about, go to fatmascara.com and check out our blog. You can follow us on all the social channels at fatmascara or email us at info@fatmascara.com.
We'll even read your letters on the air.
So profesh.
So profesh.